This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Is it just me, or has TV gotten really complicated? I'm either endlessly searching for my favorite shows or subscribing to a dozen different streaming services to make sure I can watch everything I love. And I'm not even saving that much money compared to my old cable bill. Thankfully, Philo has changed all that for me. One service, all the stuff I need. Philo's got current seasons of the shows I can't miss live on networks like Paramount, A&E, MTV, Discovery, and TLC. Classics like The Office, Martin, and Friends that I never get sick of, and all of the incredible originals on AMC Plus, from Mad Men to Orphan Black. Don't forget their library of more than 75,000 movies and shows, all of which I can save and rewatch anytime for a whole year. Never miss a minute of shows like Gypsy Rose, Life After Lockup on Lifetime, Yellowstone, or Fatal Attraction. Best of all, with Philo, you get all this for just $28 a month. No contracts, no hassles. Just one subscription and a world of entertainment. So go to philo.tv and check it out for a free 7-day trial. That's philo.tv to start watching.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
I love that play. Little zone read, play action, kind of moved towards the line of scrimmage, backed up, sucked everybody up, threw it to Ertz. There's so much that happens when you have a quarterback that needs to be played the way he does, and it gives you a lot of opportunities. Really good win yesterday, 42-19 over the Tennessee Titans, puts them in a really good spot heading into their final four games after the bye week. But more than that, it was that they were back offensively, punted once, didn't get stopped, missed two field goals, or it would have been 48 points. But this was a team that was hitting on all cylinders offensively. Kicker was an issue. We will talk to Ben Standing about that. He joins us right now, courtesy of our BetQL guest hotline, at Ben Standing on X on Twitter. Read him at The Athletic. Listen to his podcast, Standing Room Only. Let's start where we always start. Your big takeaways from the big win heading into the bye week.
Well, that was way more fun. I'll
yeah.
say that, right? I mean, you know, I've thought all along, like, it's easy to say, you know, start fast. You know, that's what teams want to do. I think for this team in particular, it's very important because it allows not just the offense to get momentum, but it puts the defense in a position where they can, you know, rush the passer, which is, you know, be more aggressive with the pass rush versus having to deal with the you know, constant run game, right? I mean, Tennessee got taken out of the run because of the score, and they've obviously struggled against the run this year. But, yeah, I mean, I thought that that was, you know, a pretty inspired performance by them. And, you know, you talked about Jaden Daniels, and obviously so much starts with him without question. But I really think what, you know, what was standing out to me so much in the early part of the season when they were 7-2 wasn't just the wins, but it was how they were just throttling these teams that were, you know, considered bad teams, or maybe teams are a little closer to their level and they're having a bad day or whatever. And they just hammered them, and that was a sign to me that this isn't just about what talent they have. This is about the energy, the desire, the will, all those kinds of things that you hear football coaches preach over and over again. Because, you know, they're not 42-19 better than the Titans or almost any team, but they keep doing this. They hammered Carolina, they hammered Cleveland, etc. And again, those are the bottom teams in the league. We've seen plenty of Washington teams lose to such teams in the past, not to mention just other teams in the league. And I think that's what impressed me as much as anything this year. And then they got back to that form again yesterday. And I also just think that, you know, you mentioned how tricky it is for any defense to deal with a quarterback like Jaden Daniels, who can run the way he can. I keep going back to Brian Robinson. When he is on the field, I just think it makes such a difference for how defenses are going to have to play Jaden Daniels. You know, Robinson's last 100-yard game was week 4 against Arizona. He got hurt the next week against Cleveland, didn't play against Baltimore, and then it's just been kind of limited. You know, there's been an injury pop up here and there. And, you know, I don't know where he's at in terms of the 100% mark, you know, how close he is to being fully healthy. But he certainly looked it, played like it. And when that's happening, I think Jaden Daniels really becomes, you know, I won't say impossible, but borderline impossible to deal with, because now you actually have to pay attention to what's going on between the tackles, and that leaves the outside or open. So, yeah, that was obviously, needless to say, much more of what they're looking to do across the board offensively than we've seen in recent weeks.
I liked one of your lines in your recap of the game on The Athletic. Ben wrote, after more intense scrutiny of offenses fading over the second half of the seasons under former Texas Tech and Arizona Cardinals coach Kingsbury's plan felt like the X's and O's version of a middle finger directed at the noise. The first play, a 10-yard completion, went to McLaurin on the right side. It's also where Washington's top receiver began his route before Daniels found him for the touchdown that made it 28-0. Quinn credited Kingsbury's vision for the turnaround. Look, we've already talked about, you know, the whole idea that his offenses fell apart as being completely debunked for the most part. I think we should get away from that conversation. It's kind of embarrassing to have if you've actually done the homework. But that narrative's been out there. And so do you think that's what he was doing? Was just saying, oh, so my guy's third in the league in reception yardage, lining up primarily on one side. Sure, here's this. Let's watch him catch a quick 10-yard, you know, quick game hitch.
Yeah, I kind of do. I just went back and watched the game replay off the broadcast, and I think it was Andrew Catalan. I think he even said on the very first play to McLaurin that that felt purposeful for Kingsbury, and obviously the TV broadcast talks to the staff beforehand, so I don't know what Kingsbury may have said, but yeah, I do think it's purposeful. I mean, look, McLaurin only played 9 snaps on the right side in this game, according to PFF.
Yeah, I was gonna ask you. So, what was the breakdown? Because he was still on the left side a hell of a lot.
Yeah, it was 55 snaps. 9 were on the right. Now, the 9 is the most he's had in a game this year. He had 6 last week and 7 early in a game. I think it was against the Bengals.
So, well, they had the ball a lot more yesterday, obviously.
Yeah. I think, you know, you can say that, hey, maybe Kingsbury does need to change things up a bit more. He does need to move Terry around. I think that's a reasonable thing to say, which is very different than just saying he has no idea what he's doing, gets stuck in one plan, and everything regresses. Right. I think they did that. And I think, you know, I think Terry McLaurin is – this is odd for him as well to be sort of put on one side and not move around as much. But yeah, I mean, I think they had I think they've had conversations in recent. Well, I know they have in recent days and you know, last week or so, and you know, that led to this. So yeah, I mean, I think that's, you know, good. Again, you know, we talk about the NBA and teams that have a supposed big three, right? And you know, essentially, you got to have those guys produce, otherwise you're probably going to lose because you're going to be thin elsewhere. But Washington didn't plan it this way, but their big three on offense is basically Jaden Daniels, Brian Robinson, and Terry McLaurin, right? And they all played at a high level yesterday, and that was obviously very challenging for Tennessee to stop. We just haven't seen that as much. I keep going back to Robinson also when Jaden got hurt in the middle of the year. So, you know, that was a game where all their big three was just cooking right off the bat, and you know, they could kind of do whatever they wanted against a defense that, you know, statistically had been pretty good this year. So I just think that was, you know, their best players showed up, and you know, credit also to the offensive line. Let me not skip over them, but you know, their best players showed up wherever they lined up, and Tennessee just couldn't do anything about it.
I think actually something that you said is kind of interesting, because you gave the number of time that it was the most that he's lined up on the right side this year, but as a percentage of the snaps, it was lower than the last two or three games. So he's actually been doing it as a percentage of his snaps a little bit more, but because he threw it to him on the right side on the first play of the game, that seemed to be, yes, and I agree with you, a bit of, okay, whatever, experts. How about this? Pretty funny. What else from you? I just spent a little bit of time talking about something that surprised me. I'm curious if you were surprised before the game that Phil Mathis was a healthy scratch. Carl Davis called up. He hasn't played well recently, but to me, that's an indication that he's probably going to stay inactive with Davis and Sheldon Day playing pretty well in his stead as run stoppers in particular.
Yeah, well, you know, I didn't necessarily think this would lead to Mathis being inactive, but when they did the team captains this week, Sheldon Day was one. Now, I haven't kept that close track of like who's been a captain, but I know he hadn't been one. And I'm pretty positive there's other guys on defense who have not been a team captain. I mean, there's, you know, to go to Sheldon Day, a guy who I'm sure a lot of people don't even know is on the team, I was like, okay, that's kind of interesting, but okay, sure, whatever. Clearly they do that as an indication of how guys are playing, you know, how they view them. So, okay, so they're viewing Sheldon Day as a guy who's doing well. Cool. Then when the news came out about Mathis being inactive, definitely the first thought was like, well, wait a minute, did he have a last-second injury here? He wasn't on the injury report. Was there an incident? And I was told no on both. And, you know, basically Dan Quinn said after the game that they liked the competition between Mathis and Davis in practice, and they wanted to give Davis a shot. Obviously, I don't think it's that just willy-nilly. I would imagine that, like you said, Mathis has probably not been playing up to snuff the last few weeks. We know we've talked over and over again about the run defense. Not that he's out there the majority of the snap, but he is still out there. And they wanted to give Davis a shot. Looks like Davis played 14 snaps. Take PFF grades for what they're worth. Not always a great indicator of anything, but, you know, it's something. That PFF had Davis graded as the highest graded defensive player.
Just mention that. 14 snaps, but yes.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, look, Davis is a guy that's been around in the league, and sometimes even if the guy isn't the most talented, he just knows his role, what to do, you know, that can be enough versus maybe a younger guy who has a little more explosion, but, you know, that doesn't always stick to the plan. So, yeah, and it was definitely interesting. And also, I think, you know, on the heels of the big transaction news of the weekend, releasing Forbes, right. I mean, it's just another player from that era who at least this team is viewing as not somebody they have to keep on the field.
Yeah, second-round pick, let's not forget, Phil Mathis was. All right, kicker. Gonzalez misses twice from 46 and 52. After they make the decision to move on, at least for the time being, injury-related, I guess. Still a little bit, you know, suspicious of all of the activity surrounding Austin Seibert and the injured list stuff last week. But what do they do now? They do have a bye week. They've got time to seek somebody else. Maybe Justin Tucker will get released by Baltimore after missing three more kicks yesterday. I'd pick him up in a heartbeat. But what do you think they do with a guy that hadn't missed but missed two field goals yesterday? You know, insignificant in terms of the final result of the game like last week's were, but what happens?
Yeah, it's funny. This morning I saw my colleague at The Athletic who covers the Packers. His article today was the Packers have finally solved their kicking problem thanks to McManus. Yeah. So yeah, it's been a journey to say the least. And I mean, look, I think they're going to have tryouts, right? I mean, Zane Gonzalez had made all his kicks prior to this week, and he did make all the extra points after last week's debacle. That needs to be mentioned. But yeah, missing field goals, you know, the only two he attempted, obviously not great. And you know, he was already a guy who was, you know, one of the many of these kickers. He's on the fringe of being on a team or not. So, yeah, I think logically they have tryouts. I mean, it goes back, though, to the same issue that they've had, you know, kind of going back to the summer when, you know, they were waiting for other teams to cut some kickers to give them some options. Well, you know, by now all the options have been picked over. I have not looked this morning to see who's exactly available, but, you know, whatever. It'll be the same random journeyman type guys out there. So you're going to roll the dice probably no matter what you do. And that, but I have to imagine they're going to bring in other guys. I mean, this is the perfect week for this, the bye week. Players may be going on vacation, but the front office guys, I imagine, will not be. So, I don't see how you do anything else but look at, see who else is available.
Let me ask you a question right now. Who are Washington's Pro Bowl players?
Oh, I remember I wrote about this a few weeks ago, but I think that was maybe right as the losing streak was starting. I mean, Jane Daniels, right? Terry McLaurin for sure. I mean, granted, receiver is always a pretty deep position, and I'm not saying he doesn't deserve it, but that can always be a little tricky. But, you know, Terry McLaurin. Sam Cosmi, perhaps? I don't know the full landscape of, like, all the guards out there, but I think Cosmi would have to get some consideration. I think Bobby Wagner, partly by the reputation, right? He basically makes the Pro Bowl kind of every year, but also, again, another year with 100 tackles. You know, it's not going to be that complicated to justify. And then after that, I don't know. I think after that, I'm probably reaching at this point, right? I don't know if there's anybody else.
I think Luvu's having that kind of a season. And yeah, by the way, the next year or two for him could be like truly given, like he becomes a perennial. He's their best player on defense. He might be the second best player on the team after Jaden. I mean, it's he or Terry. Those are the two in the conversation. He's really spectacular.
And I think what also impresses me so much about that is teams talk all the time, you know, they want, you know, what was the Scott McLuhan line? I want football players, you know, that whole thing, right?
Right.
Well, Frank, you know, they talked about they want guys who are going to be, you know, energetic, relentless, you know, you played against them, all these things. Well, this guy is the epitome of that. I mean, the energy is just consistently off the charts. And obviously, you know, he's piling up the sacks and all that. So it's one thing to say what you want. It's another thing to then go find it. And oftentimes you see teams, you know, misidentify players or just take what they can get and claim that this is what they wanted. But Luvu is, I believe, exactly what they wanted, and he's giving them exactly what they want. So 100%. You know, again, other than just competition at that position, yes, he's absolutely worthy of Pro Bowl consideration.
Denton, is there a batted ball stat? Because he's got to be up there in deflected balls at the line of scrimmage passes. I know there is
for sure. If Denton has a second to look, I can look after we get off. If not, but that's a stat, and he is a president. And also, look, I think you know it's worth noting that you know he's doing this. Not saying he doesn't have any help, but like it's not like the rest of the pass rush. I mean, Dante Fowler's obviously had a surprisingly good year, but like I don't know that I'm viewing him as like a guy who play in, play out is all over the field the way it feels like with Luvu. And then, you know, Daron Payne's obviously been down, and you know, Dorrance Armstrong doesn't have a sack since he got hurt way back in the Ravens game. So Luvu's doing it with teams knowing that he's the guy you gotta stop. But he's just all over the place. Hey, by the way, even in like in the run defense, the second play of the game yesterday, it was clear the defense had a really good read on Tennessee's snap count because the first drive, which the Titans had two false starts, players seemed to be anticipating constantly of what was about to happen. And on the second play, Luvu was like running, like almost like he's ready to go at full speed towards the line before as the ball is being snapped. And he you know tackles the running back in the backfield before he can even do anything. Just great anticipation, and again, just so consistent with his energy, and that really stands out.
Well, the third play was the batted ball that got caught by the offensive lineman. You know, that was one of maybe two batted passes or deflected passes, and I think last week he had either two or three. I mean that's a stat that if you've got double digits for the season at this point, you're in the lead, I would imagine. I don't know if Denton's found it.
So he's been credited, according to PFF, with four batted passes, but he wasn't credited with one yesterday, even though he did.
Well, he did on the third play from scrimmage. He batted it right back to the offensive lineman.
Right. So I don't know why that wasn't
Is that a pass defended stat? Maybe that's two different things. Maybe they call that because he almost picked it off.
Well, no, it's not a pass defended because he only has one pass breakup on the year in coverage.
Okay. I think he, you know, first of all, he's got 8 sacks, I think, on the year. I know Fowler's got maybe the same or a half or sack more. But I know that in the NFC, he's in the top 3 or 4 in sacks. The two guys in Minnesota, Van Ginkle and Greenard, have been near the top. And Dexter Lawrence was near the top for a while. But I don't think he's had one in a while. It may be that he's played one more game than the others. I forget.
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously Washington's played
The most games.
More than...
Here's something. I just actually pulled up the sack stats for NFC. Do you know that Aiden Hutchinson is still... I mean, this is how it would have been a runaway defensive player of the year kind of a season for Aiden Hutchinson had he stayed healthy. He had 7.5 sacks in 5 games. He's still 6th in the league, in the conference in sacks, even though he only played 5 games. Luvu is 5th, a half sack behind Fowler and behind the guys that I mentioned, actually, Greenard, Van Ginkle, and Dexter Lawrence, because I think I had looked at it last week. All right, what else? Noah Brown's injury, was that the only one from yesterday?
Far as we know, and we don't know, we didn't get to that with Quinn afterwards. We'll talk to him again today, and then they're gone for the week, so hopefully we have a chance to or we get to slip that in there or they give us an update. But, you know, they don't technically have to, so we may have to wait on that. But, yeah, right. I mean, so we'll have to see about that. Obviously, you know, the Marshon Lattimore thing is the one
yes.
we'll all be tracking going when they return for the Saints week. But, relatively speaking, I think they came out of yesterday seemingly fairly healthy.
I think in a game like yesterday, too, Ben, we kind of forget how important Austin Eckler's been to the team. They're going to miss him down the stretch here. And I don't know. He's on injured reserve, which means, what, 4 games before he can be brought back into that 21-day window?
Yeah. I mean, like I said, I think we talked about this last week. Like, I don't want to speculate, and I don't know. But, like, it wouldn't surprise me if we don't see him again this year. And then the question is, you know, where is he at with his injury and his health in general? But you're right. I mean, like, I was surprised to see this. You know, Jeremy McNichols, who is kind of feels like the sort of the Eckler replacement to some degree, he's only has 2 catches all season. Like, he's not the guy catching the ball out of the backfield. Now Robinson can do that a little bit, but obviously you need him primarily as the power back up running up the middle. So, you know, they don't have that guy. You know, even last year, you know, Curtis Samuel was able to fill in that role a little bit. And it'll be interesting to see if Eckler is gone. He again will be, as he said, for at least 3 more games. That, you know, what, how do they adjust to that? Is there something else that they can do? Maybe it's putting, you know, one of these receivers more in the backfield, or having one of the tight ends serve that role to some degree. But yeah, it's going to be it's definitely going to be an impact. No doubt wasn't an issue yesterday, but you know, having that safety valve was so important, and also the guy who could be that little bit of a change of pace for the way Robinson runs.
Well, they're going to miss him on kickoff returns, you know, flat out. I mean, he was like 3rd in the league in kickoff return average, you know, with a minimum number of returns behind Turpin and I forget who else. But and you didn't have that yesterday from McNichols, although I like the way McNichols runs. I mean, you got to love the way Chris Rodriguez runs too, right? I mean, he is probably their 2nd best runner, just pure runner behind Robinson Jr.
Yeah, I think that's one, you know, we talk about things that Kingsbury, you know, did or didn't do. I you know, in those games where Robinson was out a bit, you know, I thought that Rodriguez should be getting the ball more because he is the one guy besides Robinson who can give you that power. And, I mean, again, not much of a pass catcher. And I'm sure, you know, blocking is a factor. Robinson, I thought, had some really good blocks yesterday in protecting Jaden Daniels. But, I think it's Rodriguez needs to play. And again, maybe this is the way you use Robinson a little bit more in passing situations, and then you can bring Rodriguez in to fill in the gaps a bit on the ground. But yeah, no, I agree. I mean, I you know, I'm not saying like some other teams should have like snatched him up, but to some degree, you know, you see some running backs around the league, and you know, wonder why nobody else has been willing to give Rodriguez a shot.
All right, 8-5, 4 to go. How many do they get, and where does that land them?
Well, you know, the problem, as we know, is like these games are all over the place. Like, you know, 3 weeks ago, we would have said, oh boy, Atlanta, pretty formidable. Well, now they're down the toilet. The Saints look like they were recovering a bit. Then they lose this week. Philly obviously looks legit. And Dallas, who knows what they're going to be doing in week 18. I think in terms of the playoffs, if they get one more win, I'd like their chances. If they get two, I think that's pretty much, you know, it's not a mathematical lock necessarily, but it feels like that's going to be tough for the Cardinals, the Bucks, or the Rams to catch. I will say Tampa's schedule is scary if you're a Washington fan, because it's very simple. I think they have one game against an actual good team, and every other game is, you know, against one of these teams that Washington's kind of been beating up on as well this year. So they might be the team that can have the chance to go on a run. But, you know, I think you got to feel pretty confident about Washington's ability to get at least one more win here in the next four based on how they played yesterday and their ability to take advantage of, you know, bad teams who make mistakes. They did that yesterday. They didn't against Dallas. They did yesterday. So, you know, I don't know what I'm going to say about it. They can get one or two more wins, but, you know, at this point, to not make the playoffs would be tough. But again, Tampa Bay is the one team I'm a little bit I'm watching.
Well, Tampa's going to probably win the division, so you're not going to have to more likely than not worry about them. I mean, they although, you know, I say that, and literally Chuba Hubbard had to fumble in field goal range in overtime for Tampa to hold on to beat Carolina, who's been playing better. I'll leave you with this, because I did my playoff scenario research this morning. But if they can win three of the final four, and look, they should be favored in three of the final four. They'll be a short favorite at New Orleans. They'll be favored probably by the time we get to Atlanta. And like you said, who knows about Dallas or their state. But Green Bay's the team that they could potentially catch for what would be a crucial difference between being the sixth seed and the seventh seed. The seventh seed's going to have to go to Detroit or Philadelphia more likely than not. That seems like, you know, 8, 9, 10-point underdog territory. Whereas if you get the six, you're in Tampa, you're in Seattle, you're in Arizona, you're in L.A. against the Rams, something like that, with a better chance to at least win one. Because if we're going to be there, why not? Let's try to win one. But they'll own all of the tiebreaker head-to-heads with Green Bay. So just remember, I was the first one to tell you that. All right, anything else?
Well, I just look. I mean, Green Bay's got three games on the road against teams that are currently in the playoffs. So yeah,
I know. Brutal. I mean, that was part of it. At Lions, at Seahawks, at Vikings, they still have on their schedule. So root against Green Bay, Washington fans. Root against Philly too, but the division seems like that is a major long shot at this point. All right, my friend. Good job. Appreciate it.
Absolutely, man. See ya.
Ben Standig, everybody, from The Athletic, at Ben Standig on Twitter. Up next, we'll go around the rest of the league. Washington's game was the only 1 o'clock game decided by more than a touchdown. Really good games, including a snow globe game. We've had two snow globe games in a week and a half. Buffalo was crazy last night. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, and the team980.com. It's better
over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allowed 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
Fantasy freaks and geeks, it's James Kell from the Sleeper King Football Podcast. We all know sleepers can win you championships, but finding these guys takes time. That's where the Sleeper King comes in. Let me do all the research so you don't have to. Every week, I'm going to break down which sleepers you need to pick up off the waiver wire and which surprise deep sleepers could help you win the week. Every episode, just 15 to 20 minutes long, every Tuesday through Friday. Subscribe to the Sleeper King Football Podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your pods.